Vishnu Sahasranam, name 758, Sumedha, one who is of very good or superior intelligence. I gave one talk on this already. I'll speak some more. Particularly in consideration of how this affects us. He's great. We're not. He's super intelligent. We are not. How does this affect us as human beings? We're not human beings. We are eternal, spiritual, living sparks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he is full of intelligence, we also reflect his qualities. One of them is that we are intelligent, and in the human form of life, which we are presently in, although most of the time in our sojourn in the material universes, we're not in a human body. But in a human body, we have superior intelligence to that of those who are in non-human bodies. And then there are the higher level, there are humans, and then there are demigods, sub-demigods, demigods, and then rishis in the planets, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Mahaloka, Satyaloka, who are much more intelligent than humans. But here on this planet, at least, within the sphere of our pratyaksha, of our immediate perception, we distinguish humans from animals in many ways, but maybe the principal way is that humans have superior intelligence, not in all respects. If you or I had to build a sparrow's nest, if we say someone's got the brain of a sparrow, it's an insult, isn't it? He's gotten very small in brain, but the sparrow is expert in building a nest. We would find it very difficult to do so. He has superior intelligence in that respect, but in generals, humans have more intelligence. And among humans, especially those of the more, what is generally considered the more advanced kind, having more intelligence is considered, more intelligence than the level of one's intelligence is considered a marker of one's status. We tend to think better of someone who has a PhD than someone who doesn't. We talk about, there's a saying, a nauseous saying, it's not rocket science, giving the idea that rocket scientists are extremely intelligent people. There's a famous photo of Albert Einstein standing with a blackboard. He's teaching and writing things on a blackboard. And on the blackboard are all kinds of symbols, which most of us are very impressed just by seeing the symbols, because it's a language we don't understand. It's a language of mathematics as pertains to what exactly he was demonstrating, I don't know, to something within the sphere of the broad sphere called physics. So we're very impressed by that, because even if someone has insights into what the symbols stand for, if you've been trained in that, still most physicists at the time, and probably up to the present day, would have a hard time following the mathematical logic that Einstein was teaching or trying to demonstrate. So we are impressed if we see people with high intelligence. You can go on the internet, look at the physics stack exchange and see the kind of, there's a something out there on in the internet, the stack exchange, Hinduism stack exchange, one is physics. You can look there and see the kind of discussions that are going on. They're very technical, and it's not everyone has the intelligence that they can even begin to take that up. I remember at school, I dropped out of physics as soon as I could because I thought, why bother your brain and do something easier? My laziness. But only Krishna has full and complete intelligence. He is the source of all intelligence and all intellectual capabilities. His knowledge is supreme and it's complete and perfect. He doesn't have to sit around contemplating what the universe is like great genii like Einstein do in a very complex way. He doesn't have to do that because he already knows. Whatever the scientists are trying to discover, he already knows. He is the one with complete knowledge and complete understanding. And Einstein had only a fraction, a glimmer of the intelligence of that which is Krishna's. And wherever there is intelligence, that is coming from Krishna, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, Buddhir Buddhimatam Asmi, I am the intelligence of the intelligent. And when we say an intelligent person, well, we think of Einstein, Socrates, Donald Trump, but there are innumerable living beings, and all of them have intelligence, just like I said, the sparrows, they have intelligence how to build their nest. Where do they get that intelligence from? That comes from Krishna. How do the salmon out in the vast sea find their way back to the mouth of the river in which they were spawned and then swim up the river to continue the life cycle by spawning more eggs? Thousands of miles they travel through the sea. How do they do that? That intelligence is given by Krishna. How does the lava inside the cocoon, how does it get the intelligence? How to break it out and then come out as a moth? That intelligence is coming from Krishna. In all species of life, Krishna gives the intelligence according to the kind of body that they have acquired. Shrotram, chakshu, sparshanam, cha, rasanam, grahanam, eva, cha, adhishtanam, manaschaiva, vishayanupasevate. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the different senses of hearing, seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, they're given to each species according to their needs to interact with the world, how their senses are to interact with the world. It's all centered around the mind. The mind functions on intelligence. What an intelligent design Krishna has made. It's for this insignificant little world, but how well it is designed. We are proud because we know so much more than we did 200 years ago. Even between the time when I was born in this body, which is less than 65 years ago, and now, how much the expansion of knowledge and application of knowledge is going on. I remember as a kid I was thinking, wouldn't it be good if we all had a little phone and that we could all carry around with us and we could phone anyone, anywhere, all over the world. And that was just a dream at the time. Now, it's going on. Scientists have made discoveries which are changing our lives, improving our lives, it's said to be. That is debatable. But it's a fact that our knowledge base is increasing, especially if we say in science and technology. And in the arts and humanities, it's debatable whether our knowledge, knowledge may be increasing or different perspectives are changing. It's the arts and humanities are distinguished from science because science is supposed to be something verifiable, whereas although facts are supposed to be studied in the arts and humanities, in history and anthropology. Is anthropology, they say it's a science. You get a BSc, not a BA in anthropology. But a lot of it is subjective. Actually, it's like that in science also, to some extent. It's not supposed to be. But there's a lot more room for subjectivity because it's not so measurable. We deal in concepts. In science also, concepts are dealt with, but then they're not concepts that can be defined. When we talk about mercy and truth and love and intelligence, it's very hard to define them. Although in science, it's got a lot to do with definition. Of course, we're saddled and we're saddled with the old concept of science, which goes back to the classical physics idea that things can be defined. Although for about 100, more than 100 years now, scientists have discovered, and it's still hard to understand, and it still hasn't really entered the psyche of scientists, that scientists have themselves understood that however much you try to define everything, there are certain things that we're unable. We're just unable. We're able to understand that we're not able to understand. Anyway, 200 years ago, 400 years ago, 600 years ago, what's next? 650 years ago, I can also say. We knew less than we do now. Humans are discovering things. We'll find regularly in science articles, we now know that blah, 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 whatever it is. We, what does that mean, we? It's supposed to mean the human race. We, a few scientists, have discovered this and that. but actually, when we say we, it's only a very small number of scientists know whatever they now know, and they speak on behalf of the whole human race. We now know that the universe is heliocentric. Is that correct? No. Wait a minute. The solar system. Is that correct? We used to think it was geocentric, but we now know that it's heliocentric. But then we now know there's only one solar system, and it goes on, and exactly what's going on out there, we're trying to find out. We may know more than we used to. But we should know that however much we know, there's always going to be infinitely more that we don't know than that we know. Even if we know 10,000 times more than we knew 100 years ago, it's still infinitesimal in comparison with what we don't know. Now, I may be repeating myself from the last time, but when we're talking about things which are important for us to know, then no harm in repetition, especially when it's things important for us to know. It's not a joke show where you tell a joke and then you go on to another joke, but we're talking about serious things. We are speaking about Vishnu Sahasranam, Lord Vishnu, and now I'm talking about science and knowledge, yeah, because we're trying to understand from our tiny limited perspective, we're trying to get some understanding of he whose intelligence is far greater than ours. That's the topic, infinitely greater than ours. That is the topic under discussion. Sumedha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is of unlimited intelligence. Here is a quote from Galilei, ascribed to him. When it gets so far back in the past, we can't really be sure whether he said it or not. But it's fairly well accepted that he said the following: I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use. Very interesting quote. I'll read that again. I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use. And of course, coming from Galileo, that's particularly significant coming from Galileo, because he used his sense, reason, and intellect, believing that they had been given to him by God, which is correct, in the estimation of the religious orthodoxy at the time, apparently to defy the teachings of God, as they were generally understood at that time in Italian society. The Roman Catholic Church were not very happy with him, because what he came up with after employing his reason, his sense, and his intellect went against the teachings of the Church regarding the nature of the universe. But he said, now wait a minute, God's given us these gifts of intelligence. And when we apply our intelligence, it seems, or it is seen, not just it seems, it is seen, as he says, to go against what the religious orthodoxy are pronouncing to be the word of God. It creates a problem in religion. The science-religion divide. When did it begin? With Copernicus and Galileo? It has been going on. But they weren't anti-religious in themselves. Basically, Galileo was saying to use our intelligence is to utilize God's gift. But in doing so, we should always remember who gave us the intelligence, and that we can only understand as much as he allows us to understand, and that we can never understand more than a fraction of what is reality. Another major consideration is it doesn't really matter how much intelligence we have, but what we do with it. It isn't really that important to study the whole universe and how the planets are zipping around here and there. That's not really the most important thing at all. Whether we study it or not, they'll continue zipping around here and there. And there's nothing we can do to stop them zipping around here and there, even if we had any idea that there's any benefit in doing so. We can't change that. The real use of intelligence is to understand that everything in this world is miserable. Better get out of it. We don't belong here at all. We're using all our intelligence to study the stool in the stool room. We use our intelligence to make a map of the stool room. We're living in the stool room. We're in the material world. It's the outhouse. It's the place for the rejects. We shouldn't belong here. Instead of using our intelligence to study the whips by which we're whipped and the chains by which we're chained, the real use of intelligence is to find out how to stop the whipping and how to get free from the chain. Makes sense? Seems to make sense. Of course, we should use our full intelligence in any matter. That's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. We should use our intelligence in any matter. So if we are an astronomer, we've been trained in that, we should use our... You can't do it with half intelligence. You can't do it while watching, trying to work out some astronomical problems while watching Mickey Mouse. You can't... Cartoons on the TV. It doesn't work. You have to focus and use full intelligence. Why are there not more rocket scientists or whatever? I'm talking about astronomy and physics and this and that. That's the very prestigious area of science, is astrophysics and all this kind of thing. It's like rocket science, really on the top. Yeah. People who are rocket scientists are considered really the top scientists. Why are there not more? Why the mass of people are more, they apply their intelligence to what? To go and see some baseball game or something like this. Why are people so stupid? Well, it's easier to be stupid, isn't it? It is. Here's a quote from Henry Ford, Sr., who utilized his intelligence to build up or make a massive change in American society, an apparent improvement, and had a tremendous effect on, first of all, on America and then on the whole world, and practically became a symbol of advancement of civilization. Because, of course, Henry Ford was the first one to mass-produce motor cars. And that became a symbol of prosperity in the United States, that even an ordinary man can have a motor car, which was previously the preserve of only very rich people. And then all over the world it becomes a symbol. If you have... Living in Bangladesh in the 1980s, someone who has a car, oh, they're really, really, really up there, really high. Someone who owns a car, they're really high ranking. Although almost all the cars were reconditioned second-hand Japanese cars, but still, to have one of those is considered a very high position in society. And then in America, if you have two cars, three cars per family or per individual, very prestigious. Not everywhere, not in New York City so much, because it's so congested. It's not very practical to have a car. It makes more sense to walk a lot of the time or use the subway if you're going more distance. Anyway, here's a quote from Henry Ford. Thinking is the hardest work there is. which is the probable reason why so few engage in it. Serious deep thinking is unusual. Real serious deep thinking would take us deeper than Henry Ford imagined, because Henry Ford engaged his thinking power in making factories. Thomas Edison, great thinker, always thinking how to make the light bulb, telegraph, telephone. So he tried in so many ways, thinking. But real deep thinking means to think about our existential position. Why am I here? Who am I? Who is God? What is all this stuff going on? This intelligence going along all the time. Why? Why? Why am I always thinking of something? Well, what is that subject thinking of which I can actually attain peace from this constant rolling of the mind? This is proper use of intelligence. Atato brahma jignasa, to inquire into ultimate spiritual reality. Intelligence. I guess, my talks, they're aimed at somewhat intelligent people. Yeah, actually intelligent people. People who are intelligently trying to understand the reality of our situation in relation to Krishna. Mostly I'm talking aimed at people who have already had the good fortune. It's not just a matter of intelligence, but the good fortune to have accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the goal of their lives. And Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. He gives the Vedic literature. It's aimed ultimately at our soul, but as Srila Prabhupada said, this intelligence is just next to the soul. So Gita and the Vedic literature, they're aimed at our intelligence. They're not meant for cats and dogs. They're meant for thoughtful human beings. So it is good to be intelligent and to use our intelligence to understand these topics. Of course, it is good to understand these things. Now, we find, here in India especially, a lot of emphasis is given on intelligence and learning, especially middle class put a lot of emphasis on how their children had to study and get good grades and become an engineer or a doctor or a chartered accountant, something respectable, something which requires a lawyer is another one. What are those? Lawyer, doctor, chartered accountant, engineer, you know, all this kind of thing. So all these things, buddhijivi, there is a term, buddhijivi, one who lives by his intelligence, which is translated as an intellectual. Because some people, they make their living, their livelihood, their mode of life depends not so much on their intelligence. The shepherd goes out. We see right in the field next to the field I'm staying in. The shepherd, old man, well, he has cows and sheep. And he goes and he's with the cows and the sheep all day. He's sitting down sometimes watching them. And I wonder what he's thinking. Not much. Not much. Intellectual thoughts are completely beyond him, no doubt. Of course, in the younger generation, you see the kids taking out the cows and the sheep and the goats. Sheep, not so much. This family out there have sheep, but the goats are very common here in India. And what are the kids doing? Well, they're watching, they have their phones and they're looking at something in their phone. Intelligence spoiler. But there is much evidence. Develop your intelligence. So there's advertisement. Make your child a genius, showing a picture of Einstein. We would like to propose that better than trying to be so intelligent, your child's not going to be as intelligent as Einstein. Highly unlikely. But better than trying to build up your intelligence more and more and more and more and more and more and trying to be the most intelligent, trying to be the class topper. It's not enough to be number two in a class of, oh, it's not just a class, but they have a whole, there are thousands of kids taking the same exam at the same time. And if you become number, to be number two is not good enough. You have to be number one. Sometimes we hear of kids, they commit suicide because they were number two in a group of thousands. It happens. But instead of putting so much effort in passing exams, which is somewhat a sign of intelligence, yeah? Especially when it's difficult topics, physics, mathematics, engineering, somewhat more difficult topics, more intelligent than the futile attempt to be the most intelligent is to find out who actually is the most intelligent and serve him. And that is Sumedha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is unassailably the most intelligent. He'll always be the most intelligent. However much we develop, we may develop artificial intelligence so we can make a computer which can beat the world's greatest grandmaster in chess. But however much we may develop artificial intelligence, it's never going to come anywhere near that of Krishna's. So the best thing is real intelligence, and we are training the children who we are raising, at least in my little corner of ISKCON and the Gurukuls and the farm communities that I oversee. We're training the children to understand we are part and parcel of Krishna and we're meant for serving him. This is the best use of intelligence. And if we apply our intelligence to serve Krishna, then Krishna gives us the intelligence to serve him and the knowledge which he gives of himself that becomes revealed in our hearts. And it's sumedha, or it doesn't mean just being very intelligent, but having beneficial, good thoughts. Krishna gives all of this. Tesham satatayuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Krishna says, for those who are sincerely engaged in my service constantly with affection, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. In that sense, Einstein was nowhere compared to the kids in our Gurukuls. Einstein was a materialist. He was concerned with matter. He wasn't concerned with God. May he mention God? But it's a side issue for him. Real intelligence means to know how to put the God-given intelligence, the little intelligence that we have, to the best use. That is the best use of intelligence, not just to build up things in our brains more and more and more. That we should think. How to develop our intelligence toward Krishna. So our thoughts go toward Krishna. That is actual intelligence. In this regard, I'm going to quote from Lord Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, as found in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Listen for the word buddhi. Buddhi means intelligence. It's a fairly well-known verse, not one of the top well-known verses, but for those devotees who are really into studying Shastra and learning verses, it's a fairly well-known verse. Srila Prabhupada hardly quoted it. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to quote it quite often. Anyway, here's the verse. Tato du sangam utsrija satsu sajeta buddhiman santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. Which means that one who is actually intelligent. Now remember, the really intelligent one is Krishna. That's the center of all this talk. But in this world, someone who is actually intelligent gives up bad association and hears from saintly people whose words can shatter the misconceptions that we have in our minds. We are shackled and chained in this world by various misconceptions which misguide our intelligence. So it is actually intelligent, first of all, to understand that whatever we have understood, whatever we think is of great intelligence and great knowledge, it's all useless if it doesn't lead us to Krishna. And listen to the words of people who by their words, speaking words connected with Krishna, connected with the absolute truth, which give the real perspective, the actual perspective on the nature of this material world. It's miserable. We don't belong here. We belong with Krishna. It's actually intelligent to, first of all, admit that I'm a fool, I don't know anything, and hear from people who can educate us, starting from admission of our ignorance, and then learn about Krishna and our relationship with him. There's so much more to say about this. Now, in this talk, I haven't been describing Sumedha or Krishna very much. I've been speaking about the proper use of intelligence of us here in this world. So I'm speaking about Sumedha not only in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also in relationship to his devotees. His devotees are also Sumedha. They're also the only really intelligent people in this world. We have the word Sumedha. Yagyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedha Saha. Those who are very intelligent in this Kali Yuga, they will worship Krishna by the process of Sankirtan, chanting his holy names. So, Sumedha, we have to become Sumedha of good, clear intelligence in order to begin to properly appreciate the one who is the original, complete, total, actual fountainhead, Sumedha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. I plan to speak more about this in another session. Very important topics, because we're all enamored by our supposed intelligence, but we have to understand very clearly that real intelligence means to try to find Krishna, and Krishna shows us the way. We have to really intelligent means to get up in the morning, 10 Mangal Arati, chant 16 rounds minimum of the Hare Krishna mantra every day, and dedicate our lives to understanding and serving Krishna, associating with devotees, following the process of devotional service. So much more to say about this. I'll leave it there for now. May Krishna always be glorified. May Krishna always engage us in glorifying him and his devotees and associating with the devotees who glorify and serve him with pure hearts, sumedha, no, not wicked hearts. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas chakripa sindhubhi avacha patita anam pavane pyo vashnave. Dante nithaya chunakang padayoni patya kridvacha kaku shatameta raham bravimi. Hey sadhava, sakala eva vihaya durat goranga chandra charane kurutanu ragaha. Parivadatu jano yata tatava nanumokaro navayang vichara yamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Rama.